and welcome to another episode of Never Thought I'd Say This with Jody, Celia, and our special guest Karen today. But first, we're going to give you a little bit of mom stats. I am Jody, and I have two daughters, Zoe, age 11, and Beatrix, almost 9.
God, I can't believe she's almost 9. I am Celia Behar, and I have two daughters as well. I've got Harper, who's almost 13, and Lulu, who is almost, how old is she? 8. Almost
75.
I don't know. Almost weird. And I am a life coach and a licensed therapist, and I try to bring some sort of knowledge to this show, but I don't know that
You're trying.
Do a really great job.
Really hard.
I know.
You're trying.
I try. It's not, whatever. What do I know?
And we have a great guest with us today who is a really good friend of Celia and myself. And that is Miss, you know, I can't talk today.
It's all right.
You do it.
Well, she can do it herself, but this is Karen. Karen, would you like to give your stats? This is Karen Rothstein.
Sure.
What would you like to tell us?
Tell you. So my name is Karen Rothstein, as they just tried to say. I have two kids. I have a son who is going to be 10 in a few weeks and a daughter who is 7, who is also going on like 7.
Yeah.
Actually, no, she's going on like 45.
She is
going on 45. Everything.
Yeah. She always has.
She always has. And she is a masterclass emotional manipulator, as I found out this weekend.
Oh, fantastic.
Tears to hugs to tears in about 30 seconds flat.
She's also always kind of been like that, though. She's smart.
Indeed.
She gets what
indeed,
she
has.
Wants.
Yeah.
So, Karen, you know a little bit about our show, which is that we seem to find ourselves constantly saying things that we never thought that we would have to say. So, please, tell us, what is your never thought that I'd say this with your kids?
So mine was several years ago, my daughter asked me a question and my response, never thought I'd say, no, mommy's eyes are not broken.
You have to explain that better.
Yes. So I am, as you can probably tell by my last name, Korean.
Rothstein, really. Screams Korean.
I was adopted when I was 2 by a white family in New York, and I am full blood Korean as far as I know. And so my daughter was looking at some pictures that were up around the house, and she looks at my adoptive mom, who's white, and her dad's mom, my ex, is Italian. And she looks at the three pictures and she sort of looks at me and then looks back at the pictures and looks at herself in the mirror and says, mommy, what's wrong with your eyes? I say, what now? She's like, well, like, look at grandma's eyes and look at Nana's eyes and even my eyes. Like, they're kind of open and big. Like, what's wrong with your eyes? And I said, well, there's nothing wrong with my eyes. They're just different. She's like, well, why are they different? And how come you don't look like grandma? And I was like, oh, okay. So on this Sunday morning before my coffee, we're going to have this conversation.
Sweet.
Awesome. And so, thank you.
Now, was it the adopted conversation or the Asian conversation?
It was both.
Okay.
It was both. And, you know, we had just recently watched Kung Fu Panda, which thank you, DreamWorks, because that really helped explain, like, you know, in Kung Fu Panda, how Po's dad is a goose, but Po is a panda. So mommy's is kind of the same. Like,
wow, and it's just really tied in so nicely.
Especially because it's like Asian, and I guess gooses can be Jews. So it works out really well.
I mean, if I were going to make an assumption about a goose, that would be it.
I'm not sure they're kosher. Is a goose kosher?
It doesn't have a cloven
hoof. Only if you eat it covered in cheese.
Well, and bacon.
Right. Uh-huh. But I feel like if a rabbi kills the goose, it's kosher. It's delicious.
I'm going to defer to you two on this conversation because
I don't know. Well, let me also say, so Karen and I have known each other for almost 20 years now because we went
Which
to grad school. I know, it's crazy. We went to grad school together, and the whole like way that we met was that she was late to orientation. I had gotten to orientation. We'd never met before. I'd gone the wrong way to orientation and I was walking back and she was walking the wrong way that I just walked. So I stopped her abrasively, apparently, and was like, you're going
all
the wrong
up in
way,
my face.
All up in her face. and was like, because I'm a New Yorker, and I was like, it's this way. And as we're walking, I just look at her, and she had a chumsa on, which is, you know, a Jewish symbol. Right. And I just looked at her and I go, what's that about?
And I said, yes, hello, stranger. And, oh, by the way,
Celia, with all of the tact,
she grabbed my hand, and I don't like being touched.
I don't like touching. I don't know why I did that.
She grabbed my hand, and I'm like, okay, strange lady touching me, asking me really personal questions.
I don't know. I don't know.
And I said, I'm actually Jewish and I'm adopted. And she's like, oh, okay, well, we're late. So then we go down.
Great,
and,
enough of your backstory.
Yeah, yes. And then we went to orientation.
It was interesting because you, because I wouldn't have thought that obviously she was Jewish, which was a stupid assumption on my part. And it was a good lesson to me, honestly, because it was like, why did I feel like I could even ask you that, by the way? Like,
because you're totally inappropriate.
Yeah, I'm
because you don't know boundaries.
I had not gone to grad school yet.
But it makes for a much better podcast.
Now absolutely. I'm a therapist and I've learned this was before I went back to grad school. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's right. This was grad school orientation. This was before.
This was before, this she, before she knew became how to this act right. Stellar, yeah, this stellar human being sitting before us right now.
So let me. So I want to go back to this because, you know, I'm adopted as well. Mm-hmm. So I love that that's a topic that you are getting to bring up, because I think as adoptees and, you know, adopted parents and things like that. And I think, to our generation was there. I mean, probably less so in your situation because it was more obvious, but I do feel
how so.
Shit. No, but I do.
What do you mean?
Wow, I've really made this uncomfortable. No, but I do feel like adoption was something that, although you talked about it, was sort of a weird, like, dirty little secret.
Yeah.
It somehow made you less of a child and less of a parent. That
it's not a real relationship.
Right. People are like, oh, is that your real parent? And you're like, well, so I mean, terrible. They fed me. They put up with my shit. They haven't kicked me out of the house yet. So, yeah. I mean, they're doing better than a lot of other parents that anyone else is. But I do feel like it's something that until I was a lot older, like really in my 20s, it wasn't something that I discussed very often. It wasn't something that I talked about because it was something that I think I saw as... I didn't want to somehow delegitimize my family, that we weren't, and it was also something that, because of the way I grew up and being in the business and sort of my background and things like that, I think my parents were really worried about people hearing my story and, you know, people coming out of the woodwork and things like that. So that kind of added a little different thing, but it was a really strange thing to carry around as a kid. And I just wonder what that was like for you, because... Yeah. It must, you know, obviously people were like, oh, these are your, you know, adoptive parents or whatever. And how did that, like, how did going through that change the relationship with your parents?
Yeah. And so my adoptive parents have, I have 3 older brothers who are all biologically my parents' children. And then they adopted me. So I'm the youngest. I'm the only girl. And again, because I am older, I'm 45. You know, when I was adopted when I was 2, there were not a lot of transracial adopted families. So it was very unique. So there was always a lot of attention.
In Westchester.
Well.
Yeah, sure.
And I grew up in a predominantly white area. And so I often felt objectified. And it's no fault of anybody. It was just so unusual compared to now. And I live in Long Beach now, where there's all sorts of mixed different combinations and permutations of families. It was sometimes challenging just to be seen as a novelty first, and have to explain myself, Celia, even if it's coming from a place of wanting to connect, always feeling like you have to explain your existence and your identity.
Good job, Celia.
Way to make me feel like shit on my first day at camp. It's actually because I just dropped my kids off at camp, which happens to be at the JCC. So they're going to camp at the Jewish Community Center, of course, because I'm a good Jewish mother.
How did your kids respond to saying your eyes weren't broken? Like, what was that?
Yeah, like how did they act when you told them, explained adoption? Did they get it?
Kind of. They kind of got it. You know, it's, I think in part because, especially in Long Beach, like they have friends whose parents are lesbians and they have other families who are adopted and there are lots of mixed ethnicity couples. So for them, sort of the quote unquote not matching parents and kids is not that big of a deal. Actually, very funny, when my ex and I got divorced, my son...
Always the start of a funny story.
Always a funny... This actually is. My son asked his dad, so when's mommy getting a girlfriend? And what? He's like, what now? And he's like, well, you know, because you and mommy are divorced now, so when is mommy getting a girlfriend? Because the only divorced couples he knew were lesbian couples, so he just equated divorce with being a lesbian. So he just assumed that I was going to become a lesbian.
Oh, if only it was that easy.
I know, right? Yeah. Like, double your wardrobe.
I know. And, you know, but not deal with men anymore.
Yeah. So they're kind of used to that idea, and, you know, I explained it very simply, and there actually are more and more adoptive scenarios where the adopted child isn't evil, because for a very long time, almost every single movie,
that's true,
the adopted child always goes batshit crazy and usually kills everybody.
Right. But I didn't kill anybody. I just want that to be clear.
Yeah, batshit crazy. You got covered.
Batshit crazy. But, yeah, growth mindset.
But yeah,
so.
But I didn't, I stopped at that.
Yeah. And, you know, now... that I'm older, you know, people just assume I'm married, and 9 times out of 10, I don't correct them. They assume it's my married name because Rothstein is my maiden name.
Right.
Right. And I just don't correct them anymore. Going to temple with my ex-husband was really entertaining because they all thought he was Jewish and they would
speak to him
in Hebrew.
Oh, that's so funny.
And then say, so what did you think of the service? Did you enjoy the Hebrew? And I'm like, bitch, I actually taught English. You don't need to speak to me like I don't speak English well. I actually was an English teacher, but thank you. I enjoyed the service very much.
Is it really loud? Do they talk to you really
loud? Very loud, very slow, very slowly, very patronizing. And again, like, it's easy to take that and turn it into being very negative, which I think I spent a lot of my life being very angry about it, being upset. And then you just eventually have the moment where you realize it takes a lot more energy to think the world is against you and fighting it. And you just let it go and you just give people the benefit of the doubt. And you say, when people ask you what you are, that they're trying to connect, albeit in a very inappropriate, uncomfortable way, but
abrasive,
I guess,
in the hallway,
abrasive in the hallway. What is that? What's going on there?
So how could you teach idiots like that? Say no.
Yes. Well, Celia is still a work in progress. It's taken 20 years. I think we're almost there.
Almost.
I mean, I think, and it's really.
But I mean, I do always have that. You know what? Yeah. You know, and is it? Do your kids ever have to deal with any forms of like questions or you know?
Wait, can I tell what happened to one of her kids the other day? I was actually, you were out and I was at her daughter's birthday party on Saturday, and you had gone, went to a movie there were a bunch of kids and she went in to go and get like the kids, snacks. You know, snacks, whatever, ordered. So I was outside with another lady who I didn't know, you know, whose kid was running around.
Right.
And oh my, and I'm sorry.
One of the moms.
The names of the kids, by the way, I'm sorry, but there was a Meadow, there was a Sierra,
Willow.
And there was a Willow. Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ, we're like going through the forest.
So happy.
Anyhow.
And my daughter's name is Kalinda.
Yeah,
so,
and her daughter's name is Kalinda.
John Muir would have been proud.
And yours is Lulu.
And mine's Lulu.
And Harper.
Which
and
is
Harper.
Luna.
Luna, really.
Yeah.
And so it was like all like, very.
I feel like you need to.
It was me too. I was in it too. It was ridiculous. Yeah, there was like the moon and the stars and a tree. Like, it was a lot.
And my son Kai means ocean.
Right. It was a lot of like, wow, we're really hippie LA assholes, basically, is like what it felt like. But
did you have a jar of kombucha with you?
Shut up. I got that too today.
And a big floppy hat.
I don't wear the big floppy hats. I own the kombucha.
She does. Yes, she does.
No, I have no floppy hats. You made me get in one hat. I protest that. I will own the kombucha.
Anyway.
Anywho, she was in the other, she was in the room or in the movie theater, and I was with another mom, and this other mom came to drop off her daughter and started talking to the mom that was with me, and then assumed that the mom that was with me was actually Kalinda's mom, not that Karen wasn't. Mm-hmm. Because Callie doesn't look Asian particularly. Yeah. Like they
and neither, we'd never met, obviously.
And they'd never met. And so she was talking to this mom that's that so wasn't funny. Callie's mom, thinking that because they hadn't met.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. That was her, and just assumed that Kara wasn't Asian.
Right.
And it was just so fascinating because it was the first time that I, as your friend, had ever seen anything like that happen. And it made me realize that that must happen to your kids a lot.
So then we've obviously never gone for a manicure before.
No, we haven't.
Wait, is there a story?
Yes. So hold on, I'm going to tell the manicure story.
Well, anytime we've ever gone any place and there are Korean people, they always guilt you. They're always like, why do you want to speak Korean?
Yes.
Like, that's always the first
so, thing. So okay.
It became...
And I was going to ask that too. Like, what, you know, do people naturally sort of assume that you identify with that? Even though, okay.
So in New York City, almost all the manicures are Korean. Right. Out here, they're mostly Vietnamese. But back in New York, where I'm from, and it became an ongoing joke with any new nail salon I went to, I would go through the same exact sequence of questions. They would start doing my nails and then they would say, are you Korean? And I'd say, yes. And then they would say something to me in Korean and I'd smile politely and say, I have no idea what you just said. And they would say, why don't you speak any Korean? And I would say, hello, strange person. Yes, I will happily explain my life story to you while you file my nails. I'm adopted and so I don't speak any Korean. Oh, and then they would start going off a mile a minute in Korean to other people and start laughing.
That happened when we were at the Korean spa.
Yes.
And
anytime I'm in an environment where there are Korean people, I have to explain myself to complete strangers. And I would say, like, depending on my mood, most of the time, not a problem. But every now and then I am not in the mood for it and I will get quite abrasive about it. But again, I try to give people the benefit of doubt that they're trying to understand.
I guess it is, you know, at the same time feeling like people are making assumptions and being, you know, all this stuff. But at the same time, like, I would probably make the same assumption.
Right,
not being, you know, racist or not anything, but like you just kind of go like, oh, that's an incongruous matching you know what I mean?
That's why I asked about the humsa, because as a Jew, I was like, why is somebody who's not Jewish wearing a humsa? Is that just like a, you just think it's pretty? And do you know that's a Jewish symbol? Like, I went to my own culture without thinking what her story might be. And that's actually why I asked it, because I was like, oh, what, cultural appropriation? Is that what you're doing?
No. I once got cornered at a Jewish speed dating event by a bunch of very angry little Jewish women who were like, why are you here? I was like, I want to meet a guy, but you know it's a Jewish speed dating event. I was like, yes, I'm Jewish. No, you're not. I was like, yeah, I am. I'm like, would you like me to shema for you? Because I can. I can shema like a motherfucker. And I said,
I don't know what that is, but I want you
prayers.
It's prayers. Okay. I thought maybe it was a
Neil
really
Diamond
cool dance
a really
or something.
Good version of
you
it,
could
so
do
you know.
An interpretive dance with it, but it's the prayer that you do like at every service. You
it's
stand
the one
up,
that I was imitating Neil Diamond to you one night.
Hear,
in
Israel,
in
the Lord our God, the Lord is one.
And I do it in Hebrew.
Yes.
And I was doing it for you. Yeah.
Israel.
I do it like Neil Diamond, though.
She knows you're like, no, she has a thing. She likes to impersonate Neil Diamond.
I do.
Way more than it's normal.
It's not okay.
Which is at all. Impersonating Neil Diamond at all is strange.
It
is. She does it
weird. You know, my ex-husband did not think it was sexy. It was totally, I don't know why.
That's a shocker.
I know.
Neil Diamond, hot.
Hello.
Okay. Anyway, so.
Hello.
Hello. Oi. Yeah. So anyway, sidebar. So again.
But Neil Diamond is an important sidebar.
It is an important sidebar. Bar.
That
is a good one. It's diamond sidebar.
The diamond.
So going back, let's bring it back to the original question about my children and being a mother. It's been very interesting because now that they're a little bit older, they are much more aware about race and ethnicity. And they've asked me, so we're half Korean, right? And I said, yes, you're half Korean and you're half Italian. I said, however, like, we don't have any identification with Korean culture. Because I mean, other than I like Korean barbecue, like that's about it, right?
I'm as Korean as you are.
Exactly.
By that token.
Yes. And so I have a feeling that they accept it right now, but that's something they're going to continue to sort of wrap their head around, because my son does look more Asian than my daughter does. My daughter looks more Caucasian. So, just they're going to have to navigate that space. But because there are so many, again, different permutations in the and multiracial kids are the highest growing, you know, greatest growing demographic, it's going to be less and less of a thing.
Right.
Not certainly not like it was when I was growing up, and adoption, yeah, much less of a thing, you know, than when we were growing up.
Yeah. My kids, particularly my little one, is really interested in hearing my story, mm-hmm. because, you know, to them, adoption is sort of, they don't, they, I'm sure that they, are you okay, Karen?
She's Karen just like spilled all over herself.
It's
like
to she's match never. My morning stain of coffee. Yes. I have another one on my right tit now.
Okay, sweet. Fabulous. Go out like that afterward. Yeah. That's when you should go to a speed dating event, by the way. Just because
I'm
tits.
Looking.
Shamas.
Is it Shamas? Sing the Shema. You'll get a boyfriend in a heartbeat.
I will.
But my kids are really fascinated by my adoption story because it's something that they, you know, for them is really unique and so strange that like these, you know, people took me in. Right. They're like, that's so weird. But my little one, she always feels sorry for me.
I've seen her say this too.
She always is like, I'm so sorry that no one loved you.
I've totally been there when she's done that.
One night we were going to bed, she's like, Mommy, I feel really sorry that your mom didn't want you. And she came here. And I was like,
See, I'd be using that as a cautionary tale and be like, yes, B. And, you know, if I stop loving you, I'm giving you away too.
Oh, can you imagine if I said that?
No,
like,
she'd lose her mind.
Please don't say that.
I'm going to say it to my kids instead.
Yeah, but you're not adopted. So it's
right. No, I'll just use you guys as the example. Right. You guys, you know what? Right. This could happen to you. Right. Get your shit together.
You want
to
stop being like, assholes.
So, Karen.
I'll give you up, man.
Half Jew Asian that doesn't know who she is. You too could be like that.
I will sell you.
She has great skin.
Pearl cream all day.
All day, every day.
But it's funny because trying to explain to them that like actually it's a really good thing. But that also has been my process because I think for a long time, I felt sorry for myself that somehow I wasn't wanted or I wasn't loved or you weren't good enough to keep. Mm-hmm. Right. All of the things that adoptees, I think, feel that we don't talk about because we don't want our parents to think that they're not enough. Mm-hmm. And we don't want, you know, anyone else in our life to think that somehow we don't love them or that we're, you know, so it is being adopted sort of puts this weird cloak of like secrecy on you about so many things that you can't tell your family, your friends, other people, because you're constantly trying to manage other people's love. You know what I mean? And their expectations of like, you're good enough. You're going to, but it's a really interesting thing. And I've talked to other adoptees about it. And it is sort of this universal thing like that we all feel and deal with and that it takes a while to kind of get over. So it was funny when B said that to me and she was like, I'm so sorry that they got rid of you. And, you know, had she said that to me when I was 17, one, it would be weird because I'd have a 9-year-old at 17. But let's go a little older,
maybe like 25.
But had the 17-year-old me would have heard someone say that in a very different way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, even 20-something-year-old me would have heard a very different, would have gotten something very different out of that. Like, oh my God, you're right. Like, I know you're right. Nobody wanted me or I was unlovable or whatever. And instead, I remember when she said that to me, I laughed and I said, no, that's not how it is at all. I was like, some people just aren't capable of giving the love that a little kid needs. And so they find people who have so much love that they want to give to somebody else, you know, for the first time, instead of saying the words like bullshit, 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 I actually believed it. Mm. And I was like, yeah, that is the story of adoption. Yeah. It isn't about being rejected. It's about being loved so much that it doesn't matter where you came from or who you are or what you look like, that they will love you anyway. And I think really when I shifted my thinking around adoption to instead of being rejected, I was so overwhelmingly loved that I was taken in regardless of who I was, that I was just loved so much. And that when I looked at it like that, I was like, oh, okay. So like being able to have that conversation with my kids now, having done so much healing, I think is a much different conversation.
Yeah.
And now B wants to adopt all of the babies. She wants to adopt like 8 babies.
Good.
Yeah. I don't know that she's going to do that, but...
Lulu could be one of them.
Yeah, well, hopefully you wait till she's a little bit older.
Yeah, maybe.
17 at least.
It takes more than biology to make you a mother. Right. Where, you know,
right.
Which I always thought was so great from the opposite side of someone who doesn't, you know, have a relationship with her mother by choice now because it was, you know, so toxic. It's like, and people will say to me, you know, like, well, how can you not talk to your mom? And I'm like, because I have to do that for my own well-being. It takes more than biology to be a good mother and to make somebody a mother.
Oh, but she's so entertaining.
I know, she is so entertaining. I got good stories about her coming up. But you know, it's interesting because you guys both have talked to me also like separately about the fact that when you each had kids, it was the first time that you had people that were biologically related to you and you could see things in your, you know, in your kids that you saw in yourself. And as someone who's, you know, is non-adopted, like that's, I mean, everything for someone on the outside and, you know, speaking, I guess, for myself, but I suspect for many people who know people who are adopted, it's hard for us too. We don't know what we're supposed to say. It is still a dirty little secret.
Right.
You know, I even said to you when I said, let's have Karen on, and I know I phrased it as, is it okay if we talk about the fact that you're adopted? Because I don't know.
Well, you're Jewish. I'm sure you whispered it.
Because
adoption. It's like,
like the cancer.
The cancer. Right.
We don't say those words out loud.
No, it was like, I know you're adopted. Is that a thing?
Which is right. For once, she wasn't abrasive. It was a pleasant change.
Well, I'm glad she learned her lesson. I've already gone to grad school now. I learned from watching you. Oh, for God's sake.
The family thing is interesting because I remember when I was pregnant with my son, I consciously have put so much on this idea of finally having a biological connection to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That when he was born and I didn't feel that, I was devastated. And it really impacted my relationship with both my now ex-husband and also my son, that I felt doubly like a failure, because you all feel like a failure as a mom, like the first year.
Yeah, you don't realize.
That's what this entire podcast is about.
Everybody thinks they're doing a shitty job in raising psychopaths, but
some are.
Yeah, time will tell. Fingers crossed. I won't be a Netflix special.
But if you do, we get the rights.
Yes, okay, obviously. Yes. And it was heartbreaking for me that I would look at my son and be like, "This was supposed to fix me." Mm-hmm. This was supposed to make me feel connected and finally whole, and it didn't.
Yeah.
And see, I had the opposite.
Really struggled
experience.
With it.
Did you?
Well, I had the opposite experience because, you know, my story, and I've been pretty public about talking about it. I've talked about it in my book and stuff. You know, my mom was in jail when I was born.
Wait, are you famous? You wrote a book?
I did.
Nice.
She's on TV sometimes.
Yeah, I self-published.
It's weird.
I forgot what I was saying. God damn it, Karen.
Your mom was in prison.
Right.
When you were,
you were very honest about it.
I remember what you were saying because I was listening. Just saying, now that I've been trained, I'm much better.
Yes, in the friendship
Celia,
award,
we're validating your existence.
Back to my important story. Validate me. So for me, you know, my story was... my mom had been in jail when I was born. My father was in prison, and he was killed in a prison riot when I was 9 months old. So I didn't have any biological connection.
I had her, but
she was not around. She couldn't take me home from the hospital because she was still in jail and all this stuff. And, you know, for me, because of everything I went through trying to get sober and all this stuff, I remember I had held on to like this resentment with my mom for so long that
my biological mom,
about
and even the fact that we have to differentiate. Like,
right.
That's a really good example.
It's true. Right.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
right.
Like,
my,
you have to really,
I know what I'm talking about, but it sounds like I have, you know, a whole bunch of resentments at my adoptive mom, which is not true anymore. No.
She doesn't mean that, Janice.
Right. My mom is fantastic, by the way.
Yeah,
but,
she is.
But my biological mom, I had this deep resentment because I always felt like it was somehow I wasn't important enough to make her get her life together, that I, you know, now mind you, there were half siblings and there, you know, all kinds of stuff. But I remember once I had my daughter and I was trying to get my life together and I was trying to do, you know, do all these things and get sober and get, you know, really become who I needed to be. I remember after I had my daughter, everything changed because I looked at her and I went, oh, my own problems and struggles and everything I'm going through have nothing to do with you and have nothing to do with your value, how much I love you, how much I want to be a mom, any of that. They're two completely different things. And unfortunately, one affects the other in a really huge way. And it was in that moment for me that I finally found a huge amount of relief and forgiveness.
Wow. You're pretty mature for a 17-year-old. I bet.
Why, thank you. It's the pro cream.
Nice.
I'm so glad we broke up that tense emotional moment.
That got way too serious. Emotions, run away. Ew.
But it was, you know, talking about, it was for me that connection to having something and having my own struggles and going through it made me realize her, you know, my biological mom's own humanity and her own failings and weakness that had nothing to do with me.
Yep.
And that was that I think was probably the most important shift and change that I went through in my life, was finally dropping that huge ball of anger.
Yep.
And I don't know if you had resentment and anger towards your biological parents, or if, you know, I don't know if that was something that ever came up for you, but I feel like it's pretty frequent and comes up a lot. So,
well, you went looking, right?
So yeah. So yeah. I, in my 20s, I found out the sort of truth in a nutshell. My parents were young, in rural Korea, and my biological mother died about a week after I was born, but don't know the circumstances.
Right.
However, I found out afterwards that I don't know how much of that is true. My father remarried, has kids, and I don't know how much of it is true because there's a lot of shame attached to adoption in Korea. So I was lied to by Korean social services because they didn't want me to, my biological father didn't actually want to meet me, and they originally told me he did, and because they didn't want me to be disappointed. I think the really funny moment was right after I found out, a friend of mine at work, I was teaching at the time, said, this might be too early, but because I'm like, you know, this loud Jew from New York, right? And he's like, I'm just picturing you right now, like in like a rice paddy field, like pulling an oxen behind you in one of those ridiculous hats. He's like, I know that's totally inappropriate and insensitive, but it's just so far from who you are. But that's who you could have been. And you would look exactly the same, but you would be some like rural farmer. As opposed to like a high school English teacher Jew from New York who curses like a sailor.
At Columbia Prep.
Right. So that was really interesting. Yeah. But what, going back
I always think that too. I'm like, had my, you know, my God, my life would have been.
And you would look in
worlds.
Yeah, but you'd look exactly the same.
Which is the trippiest part.
Probably in an orange jumpsuit. But, you know,
orange is your color. I think you look good in orange.
And yet you were never arrested, and I was. I still think that that's fascinating.
But, you know, it's just such an interesting thing, like talking about how your path from a choice that, you know, and it really makes us think about it, a choice that wasn't ours, that we didn't make for our own lives, completely altered the course of events of who we became.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yep. And going back to your question about the anger, yeah, a lot of it, almost just not directed, just not anger.
Just anger, right.
Just anger everywhere. Like if you were near me, you got splattered with anger.
Right.
But then I went and saw
Leah Kalish. Yeah.
And
she did a constellation therapy with Leah Kalish, who is based out of LA. She does it with her husband, Bruce. And so if no one knows what constellation is, I did one and I talked to you about it after.
Yeah, I used to do them. Family constellations, for those of you that don't know, are done a lot of times in therapy and in treatment. Mm-hmm. And it's when you sort of recreate the family dynamic using usually the identified patient or the person kind of in the middle, and then everyone around them.
And you can step into each role of your family and talk like you are that role, so you can see where they're coming from. Yeah. So I had done mine, and then I told you you should go and do it.
And I will say, and I'm not exaggerating, and I am not a hippy dippy kombucha kind of woman. It changed my life, and it changed my relationship with my family. And I did it a couple of years ago. So up until it was in my early 40s. So for about 40 years, I was just angry and hurt and just never had a great relationship with my adoptive family. There were moments where it was okay, but it took so much energy for me to get to that place. And for the first time in that session, I acknowledged my biological mother and spoke to her. And I never, ever once in my entire life acknowledged her existence and actually spoke to her. So Leah took on, embodied her, and I spoke to her. And it was like I instantly became this child. And I said, you know, I just want to feel loved, and I want to feel, have a quote unquote normal relationship with my mother. And amongst other things that happened, and when I got out of that, I immediately contacted my adoptive family and apologized to them for how angry I'd been for so long. And I talked to my adoptive mother, and I said, I've been so angry with you because I wanted you to be my biological mother, and you could never be that. And she's like, I never wanted to be that. I know I couldn't be that for you. And it's, like I said, it just took me this long to realize that you will never be that woman, and that's okay, because you're something else and you're equally as valuable in my life. And that moment was a complete turning point. I actually was just talking to my mom and dad on the phone driving up here, first of all, I don't talk on the phone. Second of all, I voluntarily called them, and it's so different. And I think acknowledging that your adoptive family is not the same as your biological family, it never will be, and that's okay.
Right. That they both can exist and heal and all of that.
Exactly.
Well, wow. Karen, that is incredible.
Very moving.
Well, yeah. And I love to hear the story of somebody else who, you know, kind of shares this weird familial history. You know, there us adoptees, I think there is kind of an immediate bond of like, oh, you get this.
Yeah.
You understand this in a way that most people don't.
Yep.
So to all our adopted moms out there, to all our moms and dads out there who have adopted kids, It's an amazing experience, and it really is. It's not shameful. Yeah. No, talk about it. We'd love to hear your stories. If you want to write in, send us an email. We will be reading those, and we'd love to hear your stories about what your adoption story is like, either being adopted or adopting kids of your own.
I love that.
Yeah. But here's to healing and being awesome mamas, Karen.
Yes! Woo-hoo!
Celia, you're not in our club.
I know.
Yes. How does it feel?
Right?
I'm just going to sing the Shema quietly over here. Put out a chamsa.
Yes.
Eat a challah.
Eat a challah. Yeah. Listen to Neil Diamond.
Perfect. Well, coming up next is going to be fail mail and all of our social media info and a few more surprises.
Woo!
All right, so we are back. Never thought I'd say this. I said we have more surprises. We really don't have that many surprises.
I mean, I could moon you or something if you wanted me to. Flash you? That'd be a surprise. Woo-hoo!
Speaking of...
Oh, yeah, mooning.
Speaking
there we
of
go.
Mooning, perfect. This is a surprise, and it's it was certainly a surprise to me. So our Celia and I's kids are best friends. The two younger ones, Beatrix and Lulu, and then the two older ones, Harper and Zoe, they're like, you know,
besties.
Yes. And so the other night, Celia took the two older ones, and I had the two little ones here at the house.
Which we want to do more,
right,
because
it was much
more pleasant.
Dividing and conquering is so much easier.
Oh my God.
They don't mess with each other, and it's, yeah, it was great. So anyway.
Of course, the older ones had to mess with the little ones right as they walked out the door.
Right.
Right as they walked out the door. But
So we had done some, I forget what had happened.
Well,
but
it was that my kids, we just had them separated. I mean, we were doing stuff all day.
But when I came home.
Well, it was because my kids started it as is usually the story. It's a theme. I'm sure everyone's realized my kids usually are the instigators.
Well, and you had been telling me the story.
I told you what happened. The phone with, we were at my house because of
So anyway, we're at Celia's house and she starts telling me how her kids were putting fake tattoos on each other.
On their vaginas.
Let's be clear. It was more
their
above
their vaginas.
Right. Like more like lower abdomen area.
On their pubic bone.
Right.
Okay.
And over this. So she's just telling me the story in the car.
And then their butt cheeks.
Harper, right. And she still, I think, did you still have Harper and Zoe or something?
No, Harper and Zoe were at the soccer game.
That's right. They were at the soccer game. And I walk in the house and B runs over to me so excited and so thrilled and just pulls her dress up and moons me. And then proceeds to tell me, look, I've got shiny tattoos on my butt cheeks. And she had awesome, like gold sort of sundial.
Yeah, glittery.
Gold foil tattoos on each butt cheek.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lulu had a Paw Patrol, which her sister had done to her, had a Paw Patrol character that had his arm up in the air like Superman style, but pointing downward like he was about to fly into her cooch. Like that's pretty much
was it a cat?
Like. No, it was the dude. It was a small dude flying into her cooch. Like that's what it was looked like. And she's like running around, making heart out of her hands over her vagina, going, look at it. It looks like he's going to punch me in the vagina. I was like, oh my God, this is not. I said, did your sister put that on you? And she's like, yes. And I put one on her too. And they're on her butt cheeks, but I didn't put one in her butthole. I was like, great. Thanks
for
the restraint.
They have limits.
Yeah. By the way, I tucked her in later that night, or the next night. She was like, Lulu fell asleep. And I went in to go check on her later at night. And she didn't have the blankets on her. And she had no underwear on. So it was just two tattoos of like in the moonlight shining back at me of Paw Patrol
moonlight.
On her.
Light indeed.
Butt chick. Yeah. It was a full moon in my house and I started laughing and she woke up and looked at me and I just go, nice tattoos on your butt cheek. And she goes, thank you. And went back to bed. I was like, okay. So there we go.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyhow, yeah. That was our surprise.
Surprise.
Surprise. My kids had tattoos on their vagina. Well, I mean, honestly, what's the problem with them? So we have failed.
Really, it's like the vajazzling phase.
It is like a vajazzling phase.
That. I mean, adult women did far worse.
But not with Paw Patrol.
Actually,
that'd be weird.
Well, you never know. I mean...
That's I don't know. I'm sure there's something
make some,
on the internet.
Some poor life choices getting tattoos.
So I'm going to get my next Tinder date. It's just full on. Do a tattoo. And I have joked for
only
years.
Only if it's Paw Patrol.
Only if it's, yeah, of course. I have joked for years that I was going to get barbed wire over my C-section. And before my sister died, one of the last things she said to me is, you have to promise me you will not actually do that. And I was like, God damn it. Fine. So bossy with your cancer. Jesus.
So bossy.
it's not nice. So I won't actually do that, but I've been tempted. We've got some fail mail.
We do have some fail mail. Would you like to read the story of our fantastic fail? We asked some of our mom friends for...
Yes, the mamas.
Yes.
And the little
asked
mamas.
The mamas for some fail mail. And there was a really, really good one.
We had a couple of funny ones, but this one is good because it's like she said, this is from Shira. She says, it's not mine, but my husband. On Mother's Day, we went to a restaurant that was a make-your-own Bloody Mary bar. They bring you the vodka, and then you do the rest. I got up to go to the bathroom, and I came back not even 2 minutes later to find my husband scooping ice out of my vodka glass and putting it into the kids' hot chocolate. He thought it was water with ice, and there he was, giving them all 5, 5, and 10-year-olds ice drenched in vodka. I swear I cannot walk away for 5 seconds.
So my question is, was Mother's Day like a lot more chill? Like the rest of the afternoon, they were like, this is great.
Yeah, but there was like a whole nap situation that happened after that. We'd be tempted to do it again. Yeah. Now
they
you know
drove through Taco Bell on the way home. I just really need a Mexican melt.
Mommy!
I want a chalupa!
They're already like little drunks. The last thing you need to do is give them alcohol. Good Lord.
So, oops. Yeah. Check your ice before you do that.
And I'm sure he was like, what?
Yeah.
Right, I totally dealt with the situation.
Right. Yeah. I was helping them.
It's every, I mean, no offense, dads, but you do have a reputation for doing things such as that. It's just not always.
We're not any better, though. Let's be real.
I've never done that, actually. Shockingly.
You've done plenty of other dumb shit.
Oh, way worse.
Yeah, so let's be kind to the dads out there who are just trying to cool
put
off
a little
their
ice
kids.
In their hot chocolate.
Yes. Or maybe he knew.
I was going to say, that's even
maybe
better.
Maybe he knew. That maybe he was like, well, I mean, I didn't. Mom's not I had here. No idea. Oh, my God. But
yeah, mom's not here. Let's get right. it into
he was
you
trying
right
to make her Mother's Day better. Let's
he probably
it.
Did.
Yeah.
He did. Probably.
Yes.
Took the edge off. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Now I want a Bloody Mary. Great. Just kidding. I don't. All right, what are we doing? What's the next thing?
No one here. I don't care.
Well, it is actually like a Monday at 11:45. I
don't. Our listeners don't know that, Celia.
Well, now they do.
They do.
There goes your Bloody Mary drinking.
I'm being accountable.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to keep drinking my coffee. I got us all hyped
up. Well,
speaking
of, though, if you have been imbibing, you should email us with your worst stories. So, Celia, why don't you go ahead and provide them with the information they need to email us while, having 3 or 4 glasses of wine and dealing with momming.
I want you to know that I spit some of my coffee back into my cup when you said that. So just as an FYI, thank you for that because that was funny.
You're welcome.
Don't give me a dirty look because I said you were funny. She's looking at me like, what? Why was I funny?
It wasn't that. It wasn't the funny. It was the spitting the ice, the coffee.
I'm
going to
drink it
day.
Anyway.
Of course you are because you're a mom.
Well, duh.
Yeah. I've eaten food that's fallen out of my kid's mouth. So I get it.
Yeah, of course. And on the floor. Oh my God. My kid dropped something on the floor the other day. And I was like, that is the last piece of mango. And you dropped it on the floor. And I scooped it up and put it in my mouth. And they were like, ew. And I said, well, next time don't drop it.
Well, she cleans her floor though.
Like cat hair.
Oh, that I'm already ingesting that, I'm sure, all the time.
That was actually why she feels that much closer to George when she gets his hair.
It's a pica thing. I just keep eating cat hair.
Okay, anyway.
Sorry. We've gone really awry in this.
It's all the coffee that you're spinning back into your cup.
I got us these awesome coffees, though, from 85 Degrees. They are salted caramel coffees, and I sucked mine down, and now I want another, and nobody should let me have one, just so you know. All right, what the heck am I doing? Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram.
By the way, Karen, just so you know, all our shows are like this. So don't think that it's you that like took it off the rails or like did something weird. This is just how it goes.
I was looking at your producer. She's not even breaking.
No, she's
not
even cracking. This is one of the better ones.
Par for the course. Yeah. Great. Yep. And somehow Rachel hasn't told us that we can't put something in an episode because we were inappropriate.
Right. No, I keep looking over to her face. Rachel, my manager, is here, who's fantastic. And every once in a while we'll say something and she just looks over and shakes her head like, nope, no, that's not. You can't say it. But today, shockingly, we didn't get a head nod.
I know. I was really working for it, too, with the whole vagina tattoos. But no, it could stay. All
right,
sweet.
No.
We're not done yet.
I know. I still have like 5 minutes. All right. Instagram. It's at Never Thought I'd Say This. Facebook is the same. Never Thought I'd Say This. And Twitter is Never Thought I'd.
Because it's not available.
Because it's not available. And it makes me mad. And our email is if I had put Never Thought I'd Say This as a full thing, but that still would have had consistency and I can't do it because someone took it. And that's obnoxious. And whoever you are, I will find you.
But on Twitter, it's Never Thought I'd.
It's Never Thought I'd. And our email address is neverthoughtid@protonmail.com. That's what it is. That's where we're at.
Karen looks confused.
I know. This is where people can find it. It's the internet. I know you're not good on social media. People can contact you through the internet. It's a thing.
What is this internet of which
social
you
social media. Wait, and you have a blog, by the way. You should be able to promote it for your job.
Yes, please.
I want people who know what I do professionally to listen to this.
Hey.
Yes. I'm just kidding.
Yes, you
yes,
do.
No, I'm actually a vice president for an educational technology company called Illumin. And I every few weeks I write a blog about education, trends in education, and then also how technology is impacting it. It is illuminconnect.com is the website. And then I am on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. And I have no idea what my Twitter handle is.
Sweet.
Or
good to be prepared.
Like
right.
Really I know.
Nice. So look for the Asian Karen Rothstein.
Yes,
because I feel like there's probably not going to be
just,
that many.
Just Google Karen Rothstein. And then when you go to images, pick the Asian one. And that's me. That's me. I am not. I've actually Googled myself, of course, you all have. I am not the real estate agent in Florida. And some other random person.
Wait,
but you
have an actual Instagram. You repost blogs on there. They could find you.
Yeah, I think it's KL Rothstein.
I think so too.
Our producer's head's gonna explode at the amount of editing that needs to happen for right now.
It could be Jello 70.
Yeah, you used to have that.
But I'm not going to explain that
one. No, you don't want to know.
Nope. All right, you guys, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Never Thought I'd Say This. And remember, keep killing the parenting game.
And not your kids.
Never Thought I'd Say This is a co-production by Audioboom and Main Event Media.